Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
So it is so rare that you can find a brand that helps deal with so many different issues, from anxiety to insomnia to hair loss to even skin issues like I have, like eczema. And I have found that brand through Fittish CBD. So Fittish offers high quality plant powder essentials to help you overcome so many issues and achieve a better sense of well-being. So Fittish is a wellness brand that offers affordable and transparent, which is important, CBD options ranging from tinctures to help promote a better sense of overall balance to a wide array of skincare that fits into your lifestyle. Now, one of my favorite products is their Doing It moisturizer. It is so amazing, so luxurious, and has that extra CBD in it. And I also love their Mini League skin set that has so many different products that you can try. So if you want to try Fittish for yourself to get the best wellness in the game, at Fittish.com and use the code FIRSTDEGREE15 for 15% off your order. That's FITISH.com. Enter code FIRSTDEGREE15 at checkout for 15% off your order. Fittish, a clear mind and clearer skin for the win.
The first degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
The first degree.
You see it on the news. You see it on the paper. You see it on Facebook.
These things are supposed to happen in movies, not in real life.
I don't understand. I'm like, that's your child. Kelsey was 2 months pregnant, and that's your child that you just, like, took their life away before they even had a shot at having one. And, you know, killed the mother of your girlfriend, and you don't feel a f***ing thing. You don't go to the media and say, like, you know, we need your help. You don't cry. You don't act sad. You don't let it affect your life at all.
Welcome to The First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. My name is Jack Vanek. I'm sitting far away from Alexis Linkletter and Billy Jensen. And today is part two of the Kelsey Schelling story. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, you're going to have zero idea what we're talking about. So go back, listen to part one. Good for you. You can binge it all and then come join us right now. But before we jump into the case, we got to talk about, what day is it today, Billy?
All right. Well, today is Wednesday, March 31st, and it's Manatee Appreciation Day.
Oh my gosh. That is my favorite animal.
I love
in
a
the
manatee.
Entire world. I
They're
love
the blobs
a manatee.
Of the sea. I love them
they
so much.
They are so cute and fat and gentle. Oh, I love them so much.
They're just a little blob floating around. I don't know if I like a manatee or a beluga whale better, but they're both national treasures in my mind.
Manatees have like wrinkles. They're so cute. I love manatees.
Yeah, they're the Sharpays of the ocean.
Oh, do we have any other good days, or do we leave it at manatee? What,
you know what? No,
I think we
I
can
will
do
like
better,
say,
but sure.
You know what? This was the symbol of freedom for a 5-year-old, National Crayon Day. It was nothing like getting that 64 box of Crayola crayons.
Yep. That's when you know you're fancy. You're not getting the eight colors. You're getting the 64.
No. They're just saying, go for it right now.
I wonder if kids still color with crayons. Is that something they do, or do you just have the iPad?
Yeah, they still do that. Yeah.
Go color a clown or something, kids.
Color
there.
A manatee.
That's what you do? Color a clown? Color a manatee.
Color yes, a manatee. Color a All right. Well, that's enough of that, because we have a really robust episode to get into. So,
and we still have our first degree tailor with us.
Yes.
Jack was supposed to say that, but just want to remind okay. you all. Taylor's still with us.
All right. Well, yeah, I was supposed to say that in the first 15 seconds and I f***ed up. But let's turn down the lights.
And turn up your anxiety.
Because this could be you.
Last week, we took you through the February 4th, 2013 disappearance of 21-year-old Kelsey Schelling, who was last known to be driving 2 hours to Pueblo, Colorado from her apartment in Denver. This drive took place only hours after receiving confirmation from her doctor that she was 8 weeks pregnant. The father was her boyfriend, Dante Lucas, and she was driving to Pueblo to see him and talk about their whole situation. Suspicion immediately fell on Dante, who, following Kelsey's disappearance, had changed his story several times. Dante was subsequently caught on surveillance footage moving Kelsey's car several times before draining cash out of Kelsey's bank account with her debit card, and finally abandoning Kelsey's car at a nearby hospital where it was later discovered by police. Kelsey's family and friends launched social media campaigns, held vigils, turned to the media, and conducted foot searches for Kelsey. Noticeably absent from each of these searches was Dante himself. To observers, it was clear that Dante was responsible for Kelsey's disappearance, and evidence supported his guilt too. But years would pass before any significant action would be taken in Kelsey's case. The question here, of course, is why.
Kelsey's friends and family were helpless and heartbroken as Dante remained free. And they were also struggling to get police to take Kelsey's case seriously. So not only did the Pueblo police not arrest Dante, it seems as though they were putting forth the minimal effort into trying to get to the truth. As far as why the police didn't put the adequate resources forth to find Kelsey and properly investigate Dante, now that answer is going to be complicated. Especially because 8 months after Kelsey's disappearance, the Pueblo PD held a press conference and announced that they did in fact believe that Kelsey had been met with foul play. But authorities still hadn't found her remains. When Kelsey never materialized, the fact that they couldn't tangibly prove a murder had taken place became their crutch. Despite the fact that all of the other evidence suggested that Kelsey was no longer alive, and that Dante very well had something to do with it.
Deep down, I wanted to believe that it was a different situation and that, you know, maybe she just needed to decompress. But knowing Kelsey and how communicative she was with her friends and family, I feel like I knew that she was dead.
So the bottom line is that publicly, the Pueblo PD presented a facade that made it appear as though they very much cared about getting closure for Kelsey's family. But behind the scenes, it was an entirely different story. And meanwhile, Dante Lucas carried on with his life as if nothing ever happened. And as time passed, it was infuriating for Kelsey's friends and family. Here's our first degree Taylor.
I think he's emotionless in this entire situation. I think that, you know, he didn't care in the beginning about her when she was alive and they were dating.
The last real significant efforts made in Kelsey's case were in 2013, when a canine search was conducted in a remote area of Pueblo. But while the police investigation lost steam, Kelsey's family refused to. They offered a $10,000 reward, and then a $50,000 reward. And they hired private investigators to work on Kelsey's case themselves.
It shocked me every day for nearly 5 years that he wasn't arrested. And this is one of those cases where the more you find out about it, the more that it blows your mind that the police dropped the ball this badly. And it's literally just sickening. It's how they acted from the very beginning.
The alleged lack of movement in Kelsey's case persisted for years, but the private investigators hired by her family remained vigilant. And in 2016, Kelsey's family filed a civil suit against the Pueblo PD, naming a handful of officers. Also named in the suit was Dante, his mother Sarah Lucas, and additional members of his family. The suit went point by point detailing the Pueblo PD's alleged wrongdoings in the handling of Kelsey's case. Brace yourself, because the accusations are jarring, disturbing, and perplexing. So according to the suit, when Kelsey went missing in 2013, her family immediately filed a missing persons report for Kelsey through the Pueblo PD. But the private investigators found that as of February 5th, 2015, there had been no record listed within the Pueblo PD online records database that Kelsey Schelling's disappearance had been logged as an open investigation assigned with the police department, and there was no case number. So we get the hypothetical gray area with Kelsey's case not being categorized as a homicide because they didn't have remains. But what could their excuse be for the fact that there was no documented case opened on behalf of Kelsey at all?
Beyond that, the suit alleges that the Pueblo Police Department failed to retrieve items from the Denver Police Department, which would have enabled the Pueblo PD to enter Kelsey's DNA into CODIS. In fact, Kelsey's mother learned from an independent source that Kelsey's DNA needed to be listed into CODIS and still hadn't been. Kelsey's family had to learn this process and take the necessary step to obtain a DNA profile personally for it to be submitted to CODIS themselves.
Okay, so what happened here is the Denver police was given, I believe, like a hairbrush, a toothbrush, something with Kelsey's DNA on it. And the Pueblo PD was supposed to pick it up from Denver and then extract the DNA, put it in CODIS so that if they found remains or if they found a person, if they found DNA evidence anywhere else, they could match it to Kelsey. And that was never done for whatever reason. So, you know, how significant is that? Billy, you're the CODIS guy.
That's incredibly significant. Just putting it into any database, even if they put it up into GEDmatch and be able to find that person. If her body, if her killer had taken her body, if we're you know, presupposing that she was killed, had taken her body, moved her to another state, they find skeletal remains in another state, they're not going to think, you know, not going to put two and two together. We have, you know, 40 to 60,000 unidentified remains sitting in storage lockers and paupers' graves right now. And nobody had put, you know, a lot of them are for older ones, a lot of them are for newer ones. There's absolutely no reason for this to have happened.
Yeah, it's perplexing.
It is. And we're not done. So obviously, early in the investigation, Kelsey's family leaned on the media heavily as a resource to get word about Kelsey's disappearance out to the public. And the suit alleges that on the heels of one of these press conferences, certain members of the Pueblo PD interfered.
There was even an instance where Kelsey's family decides that they want to have like a meeting and speak to the media about this and ask, you know, for the public's help because they were not getting any help from the police department. And when the police like learned about the fact that her family were going to hold a press conference, they drove over to the Lucas residence and told Dante and Sarah, you need to get in front of this and you need to go defend yourself. So knowing that he was a person of interest, they deliberately went over and talked to Dante and his mom and said, you need to go and defend yourself.
Yep. All of this is very hard to understand. But I want to get back to Kelsey's car. After it was found, Kelsey's family understandably wanted it processed for evidence. Well, according to the suit, a detective named Robinson from the Pueblo PD told Kelsey's parents that Kelsey's car had been processed, and unfortunately, it had been completely wiped clean, and there was no evidence recovered. Now, this statement was repeated several times over the span of months to several of Kelsey's family members, as well as to the independent investigators hired by Kelsey's family.
And however, when these private investigators started questioning the processing procedures of the Pueblo PD, they requested to process the car independently, and they got approval. In January of 2014, the PIs requested to meet with Detective Robinson without the presence of Kelsey's family at the Pueblo Police Department. And it was there that Detective Robinson confessed that he had lied to Kelsey's family about the evidence found in Kelsey's car. So he had stated that they indeed recovered a substance from the trunk of the car that is consistent with dried bodily fluids, and they'd also recovered two large palm prints off the front seat headrest of Kelsey's car. And there was no excuse offered as to why they lied about this, stating that, quote, the car was wiped clean and no evidence was collected. And it's alleged that Detective Robinson further stated that the evidence was currently being stored in the police department's evidence room and had never been submitted for testing with the crime lab. And at the time the suit was filed, this evidence had still not been submitted for analysis. The suit then claimed that this was a deliberate attempt to conceal or destroy physical evidence.
Right. And so here is the kicker. So when the independent investigators were finally able to process the car themselves, they recovered three fingerprints from the driver's side visor mirror. They identified undercarriage damage on the passenger side of the car and obtained what appeared to be a human hair from the damaged area. They also obtained samples of this hard yellowish substance that appeared in several locations about the front of the vehicle. And remember, it's alleged that these findings were in addition to what the Pueblo PD found and lied about finding and ultimately never tested anyway.
Now, the private investigator goes and looks at Kelsey's car and he said, I found evidence here. So there's no way in hell that you guys combed over her car three times and didn't find anything. So then the detective admits that he lied. And when he admits that, he said, well, you know, we never went it out, sent it out for processing, and we did destroy some potential evidence. He never gave a reason why, never said, like, you know, oh, we're busy, or, oh, I just don't think there's enough here. And even, like, the private investigator, when they, you know, did their search of the car and they found evidence, the detective literally refused to take it. He wouldn't take it into the police department's possession. So originally, there were a few other things that they didn't do. One of them was Kelsey's car had, like, OnStar navigation, and the detectives refused to follow up with General Motors to get that information. There were blood stains found in Sarah Lucas's house that the landlord had contacted police about and said, hey, we have bloody carpet. I know that my tenant is the mother of the suspect in this young girl's disappearance and murder. And the police refused to go out there. The landlord, after weeks, said, you know, how about I cut it out and I bring it to you guys? They said, don't do that. We wouldn't accept it. There was a tip about a corpse in a lake that they never went to investigate. And then there were indications from search dogs about evidence in Boggs Creek. So they've, in the beginning, they completely denied having an open homicide investigation.
I know that all of Taylor's assertions are shocking, but they're all documented in this civil suit. And one more worth mentioning is that when the Pueblo PD did ultimately agree to send surveillance footage out for professional analysis, it was later revealed that the professional was a member of a local outside law enforcement agency, and this high-tech crime-fighting software that was utilized to analyze this surveillance was Photoshop. So there was no enhancement of this imagery. So in the surveillance we're talking about is we see a man going to pick up Kelsey's car from the Walmart parking lot, and he's not identifiable. He's wearing a hoodie. And then we see a man dropping this car off at a hospital. Again, not identifiable, but this figure is the same height as Dante, but you can't see his face. So the idea is whoever dropped this car off is the person who killed Kelsey. And it's like they didn't give a shit. Like, yeah, yeah, we're going to have that surveillance sent. But they didn't. And it's like, this could ID your killer and you don't give a shit. This shit you're testing in the car could identify your killer. It's hard to understand the thought process here with the Pueblo PD.
Still to this day, would like to know why things went down the way that they did. To me, it makes no sense why a law enforcement official would just not look into this further. To me, it didn't make any sense at all. It was a range of things. Like, the ball was dropped in every single possible way.
Yeah, and it's not just identifying the face, too. You know, you can go through and you can identify, outfits that they're wearing, sneakers that they're wearing. You know, it's not always the face when you're talking about enhancing video. So as we said, Kelsey's family, despite the setbacks and obstacles, had never stopped fighting. By now, Kelsey's family had offered a $10,000 reward for information about Kelsey's disappearance, and then they upped that to $50,000. The Pueblo PD has been publicly put on blast for their blunders related to the Kelsey Schelling investigation. And they defended themselves and said that the discontent from the family was due to a lack of communication, noting that it wasn't as good as it could have been. And then there was another blow. That civil case that was brought forth by Kelsey's family, it was dismissed.
Unfortunately, the police officers had some sort of immunity. Just complicated legal stuff, but what I got from it essentially was that police, you know, they have to have this law of immunity, because otherwise, you know, in cases where, it, you know, if they could be sued for anything, they wouldn't want to go to work and do their job. They'd, you know, be in fear of being sued or punished. And so the judge gave them immunity and, you know, Kelsey's family lost, and the judge dismissed it. It's like mind-boggling, and it makes you so angry because, like, you see how hard, like, cops work in cases to solve murders, and it's a devastating, like, gut punch to know that they didn't do that for Kelsey.
Now, it's exhausting to try to put yourself in the shoes of Kelsey's family. You can't ever come to grips with what they're going through. But thankfully, a turning point to all of this did come. And it was right around 2016. That's 3 years after Kelsey's disappearance, that the efforts of her family began to pay off.
They got to a certain point where they were trying to get help from other people. And eventually, the CBI, Colorado Bureau of Investigation, takes over.
And after the case is in the hands of the CBI, finally, some real movement begins to happen. Agent Kevin Torres was appointed as lead investigator.
When it took a turn was when Kevin Torres from the CBI took over the case, and that's when it really took off. It was a huge relief, and I remember, you know, talking to our friend Allison about it, and, you know, she was like, the time is like, she's like, it's coming, like, it, you know, it's coming together slowly, but this is the first person who's actually tried to investigate everything in its entirety. And that's a hard thing to do when you're coming in to a case that's technically a cold case and there's no body, and the police didn't even take a buckle swab of like any of Kelsey's like DNA. Like they didn't, you know, take any hair from her brush or her toothbrush. So late as 2 years into the investigation. And so Detective Torres had so much that he needed to do on the case. It was, you know, from the moment he took over, like, he wanted to get justice for Kelsey and, you know, for her family and friends, of course. And I think that that's what it takes sometimes, is just somebody who connects with this and, like, takes it seriously and feels for the family and puts himself in their shoes.
The CBI had a plan, and step one was digging up the backyard of the home Dante and his mother, Sarah Lucas, lived in at the time Kelsey went missing. And by the time the dig happened, they had moved from this rental property and new tenants had moved in.
And Detective Kevin Torres eventually got a warrant to dig up the home that Dante was living at when Kelsey was murdered. And there were search dogs that, because they're trained to hit on the scent of, like, human decomposition. But at that point, all they hit on was the scent, and the police didn't find anything. But keep in mind, that was also 4 years after he murdered her. So any evidence, you know, that was probably in there was destroyed.
So although the dig at Dante's old address was a wash, there was much more to be done, because it turns out that Dante hadn't exactly kept a low profile. He had been meeting women on the internet, and he was just dating around. And one woman he had met on the internet was named Jessica. And a heads up here, Jessica is a very polarizing figure in this whole case, and it's unclear why exactly she became involved and motivated to insert herself into this investigation. But apparently, she had heard of Kelsey's disappearance and that Dante remained a free man. So she befriended him on Facebook. And she later said that her plan was to get close to Dante with the hopes of getting him to implicate himself in foul play against Kelsey. And here's the thing. Jessica allegedly succeeds. And she does get Dante to admit various aspects of Kelsey's disappearance. One of the things was admitting to being the one who dropped Kelsey's car off at the hospital before it was discovered by police. And this should be great information, right? It should have been. But it was later revealed that Jessica had fallen in love with Dante, and the relationship had become an intimate one. So this is a complete shit show. The whole thing is really bizarre to me, and it's unclear why Jessica would put herself in this situation that was clearly dangerous.
Right. And while Jessica's accounts and motives were muddled, thankfully, they're not the only thing the CBI had to go off of. The CBI learned that Dante, his mother Sarah, and three of their family members had actually beat up and robbed $1,000 from a man. Weird. The CBI decided to jump on this opportunity to arrest Dante for this robbery so they could get him off the streets, because they really did know and believe that Dante was responsible for Kelsey's disappearance. And thankfully, they understood the ongoing danger Dante posed by allowing him to remain free. So interestingly, when the CBI did arrest Dante, he was actually on his way to the airport with a one-way ticket to Phoenix, which is where Jessica, the strange woman who inserted herself into this case, lived, or where her family lived, something like that. But he was going to seek refuge with her. So she sort of flipped. And she was a good guy, allegedly, when she started, but flipped and got sucked into Dante's little web. Once the CBI caught up with Dante, they arrested him for this aggravated robbery charge. And once Dante was in an interrogation room, they pressed him. They reinterrogated him about everything. And eventually, Dante slipped up. And he admitted that he, in fact, was the man who was this identified figure in the surveillance footage moving and dumping Kelsey's car on the day after she went missing. And it was Dante's admission that convinced the DA that they finally had enough to charge Dante with Kelsey's murder, despite the fact that they still hadn't uncovered Kelsey's remains. Dante was arrested on December 1st of 2017 and was charged with the first-degree homicide of Kelsey Schelling.
I was shocked, obviously in a good way, because I, you know, didn't have faith in the police to do their job anymore. And so as much as, like, I, you know, we had hoped for it and, you know, I knew that Detective Torres was working really hard, I still didn't have that faith in law enforcement because for 4 years, there was nothing. And so when I found out that there was an arrest warrant, you know, I was overjoyed. And like when I saw like his mugshot and how awful he looked, I'm just disgusted with him. I'm glad that he's where he is.
The arrest had come 4 years after Kelsey vanished. 4 years is a long time for Kelsey's friends to theorize about what they think happened on the night she went missing. Here's Taylor.
I think he was planning to kill her. I would bet my life on it because he knew that she really wanted that baby and that she was really excited to be a mom. He knew that there was no way in hell that she would terminate the pregnancy. I mean, she had already sent like pictures of the ultrasound to her mom, to Dante's mom even.
And looking back on what we know about that night, Dante kept Kelsey waiting at Walmart for more than an hour before telling her to drive over to his grandma's house. And Taylor has a theory about that.
I think the reason he was taking forever, like, number one, he was always, like, late for shit. But to take that long and for Kelsey to just be like, okay, I'm going to come to you. Maybe, like, he was, like, nervous or, like, still trying to figure out what he was going to do with her. And, like, you know, like, I think that that also could factor into why he didn't meet her right there. And I also think that, like, him not really thinking about, like, the cameras. And so maybe he took a long time to where he knew Kelsey would just go there and meet him. And also just complete, like, disregard for her and her time.
You can go crazy trying to figure out how Dante pulled off this plan. But law enforcement theorized that Kelsey was strangled due to the fact that no murder weapon was ever found. And now that Dante had actually been indicted for murder and pleaded not guilty, the hope was that some of these burning, looming questions would be answered in a courtroom. Dante's arrest happened in 2017, but it would be 4 more years before the trial would commence. It's heartbreaking the amount of waiting Kelsey's family and friends were forced to endure.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and I bet it can be hard work. But do you know it's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com. You know, I'm not going to lie. There are very few ways that my life has improved over the past year. But one of the things that I have done for myself, and I am so proud of it, is taking my vitamins. And I have done it through Ritual. So Ritual is a multivitamin that contains key nutrients and forms that your body can actually use, and it helps you fill in gaps in the diet with no shady extras. So Ritual's delayed release capsule design delivers high quality nutrients, including vitamin D3, in just 2 daily pills. And Ritual is made traceable. You'll always know what nutrients you're taking and where they came from, thanks to Ritual's one of a kind visible supply chain. And Ritual is designed with your life stage in mind. It's now available for women, men, and teens. And Ritual multivitamins are scientifically developed to help support different life stages, which is super awesome. And Ritual makes healthy habits easy. They're delivered to your door every month with free shipping, always. So get key nutrients without the BS. Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/firstdegree to start your ritual today. You know, if you have multiple credit cards, you know that tracking multiple balances, multiple due dates, and website logins can be so stressful. So Upstart, one of our awesome new sponsors, makes things simple with one monthly payment in one place. So Upstart is the fast and easy way to get a personal loan to pay off your debt all online. So whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get a simple fixed monthly payment. So Upstart finds smarter rates with trusted partners because they assess more than just your credit score. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate upfront for loans from $1,000 to $50,000. And you can get approved on the same day and receive funds in as fast as one business day. So find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/firstdegree. That's upstart.com/firstdegree. And don't forget to use our URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/firstdegree to get started. After several delays, Dante finally went on trial for the first-degree murder of Kelsey Schelling on February 3rd of 2021, almost 8 years to the day from when Kelsey had vanished after driving from Denver to Pueblo, Colorado to see Dante. And the prosecution had a clear plan. They're going to prove through text, cell phone data, and surveillance footage that Dante was undoubtedly the one that killed Kelsey, who was 2 months pregnant. And they believed even the movement of Kelsey's car the following day also told a story, one that ended with Dante driving Kelsey's car alone before taking money from her bank account and dumping it. And these texts exchanged that evening would demonstrate that Dante's actions were planned and that he had made a concerted effort to lure Kelsey away from her home to see him. And the motive was clear. Dante was clinging to some pipe dream that he was good enough at basketball to play in the NBA, and a child was not part of those plans for him.
Dante still, like, thought that he had a chance to go to the NBA, even though, like, okay, Dante, like, you played basketball at junior college where anybody can get accepted. And he was so narcissistic that, like, he genuinely believed that he still had a chance. Because the way that it happened and, like, the way that he coaxed her down to Pueblo, it was sickening, and you could tell that it was completely premeditated.
The fact that Kelsey's body had not been recovered didn't rattle the prosecution, who believed that there was plenty of evidence to convict without remains.
But the defense's strategy was to claim that Kelsey's disappearance was always just that, a disappearance. This is a missing persons case. Without a body, there was no possible way to prove that Kelsey was even dead, let alone murdered by Dante. The defense pointed to the fact that not only were no remains found, but there was also no murder weapon or any other smoking gun evidence. Countless witnesses were called for the prosecution, friends of Kelsey who detailed the abusive aspects of their relationship. They explained how Dante used Kelsey for money, for her car. He called her names, shattering her confidence. And when Kelsey would try to move on, Dante would suck her right back in. Besides all of the text evidence we've already gone over, additional texts from Dante's phone were presented in court. Texts that revealed that instead of worrying about where Kelsey and his unborn baby were in the days after she went missing, Dante was focused on something else.
Hearing all of the text messages that Dante had sent out, I don't know how long after it was after he had murdered her, but he, in the following days, like, was texting multiple prostitutes, asking about meetups at hotels, you know, all kinds of things like that.
Prosecutors called witness after witness that made Dante look, well, really terrible. There was testimony about how Dante and his family were ripping down Kelsey's missing persons posters. Posters that mentioned nothing about Dante, by the way, just that Kelsey was missing. Testimony about how Dante's story changed over and over again. Testimony about evidence found in Kelsey's car. There was even testimony about Dante's mother's possible involvement. At one point, Dante's mother took the stand and detailed how on the same day Kelsey vanished, Dante told her that Kelsey had miscarried and was no longer pregnant. And here's a tidbit that was shocking, but not necessarily surprising. There was testimony detailing about how the Pueblo PD obtained Dante's phone on February 15th of 2013, 2 days after Kelsey went missing. but the Pueblo PD never asked for access to this phone for 2 years until 2017. And this, of course, was Detective Robinson, who was named in Kelsey's family's civil suit. He's the one who testified to this and admitted it was a mistake. So how hard can you actually be investigating this case if you have your lead suspect's phone and you never open it or ask to open it for 2 years?
Yeah, it was actually 4 years. Yeah. And it's like
4 years.
Even worse. Yeah,
it's just I don't understand it.
It's so ridiculous. The it's one thing for a police department that may be talking with the DA's office and they're saying, we don't have a body. There's certain DA's up. We have this question all the time. Some places will go for a murder conviction if they don't have a body. Some of them just won't. A lot of it comes down to the DA's office. But the fact that, and originally I always lean on the DA's office for that. And then me and Alexis were having a conversation. He was like, no, the police really, really did a lot of things wrong in this one. This is one of the most glaring examples.
I mean, how many pieces of evidence were right in front of their nose? And they're like, no, thank you. I guess we don't want any of that.
Right.
Like it's actually insane.
Yeah. And there's speculation. I was pressing Taylor on this. I was like, why? Why would they help Dante? Why would they tell Dante, you know, they're having this press conference, go defend yourself. Why? And there's nothing like tangible you can really prove. But the rumors are is that Sarah Lucas, Dante's mother's father, was in law enforcement. And there's something there, but I don't have any evidence of that. Either way, it seems like it's either they're incompetent or they're intentionally protecting him, and it's hard to discern which, but I don't know, in the face of all this glaring evidence, you know, why they would drop the ball so glaringly. But we have to admit, though, the totality of the circumstantial evidence against Dante is truly astonishing.
And all this testimony is hitting Dante's defense really hard. But the most shocking, perhaps, was yet to come, because prosecutors called an inmate who had shared a cell with Dante while he was in jail awaiting trial. And apparently these two had developed a friendship. And on the stand, this inmate claimed that Dante said to him at one point, they'll never find Kelsey's body, quote, and that's because Dante and his mother hid it. So this is jaw-dropping testimony. Everyone who thought he was guilty believed he disposed or hid the body in some way. But now his mom is being implicated in this crime. And they weren't done calling witnesses, but there was one problem. A woman who was considered a star witness for the prosecution, 31-year-old Roxanne Martinez, was shot and killed on February 25th of 2021. That's just last month. Only days before she was slated to testify. And Roxanne's testimony included details about how Dante confessed to Roxanne that he had in fact killed Kelsey. And this looks really bad for a number of reasons. The Denver PD arrested 29-year-old Emmanuel Chandler for Roxanne's murder. And they've said that they don't believe the murder is connected to the trial. Several members of Roxanne's family have spoken to the media and have given conflicting statements in that some of them absolutely believe that Roxanne's murder is connected to the prosecution of Dante. So the investigation into Roxanne's murder is still unfolding, so more info may be available soon. Either way, it's incredibly tragic that Roxanne has been killed and she was part of this investigation as well.
Right. And the fact that Roxanne was murdered is horrific and it's tragic. And the emotional ripple effect of her murder is felt by her loved ones. And it's awful. I cannot even imagine. But the loss of her also meant the loss of her testimony in this case and whatever implications that loss meant for the trial as a whole. Roxanne was slated to testify about admissions Dante had made about the crime. Now the only testimony to these aspects of this case would be coming from that prison inmate who had shaky credibility.
The only other witness you have that said, like, yeah, he confessed to me that he did it was an inmate in prison. So in my mind, I'm like in some people's eyes, the only credible witness who's like, you know, was going to testify that she admitted to murdering her is shot dead and now she can't testify. Like, it was nerve-wracking. It was frustrating. It was like, you know, then my mind is like, well, can they use the testimony that she did in pretrial? And just freaking out and wondering, you know, was that it? Was that what the jury needed, was to not hear a witness saying that, you know, he confessed to her? Was that what they needed to decide, nope, he's not guilty, or we can't find him guilty?
Roxanne's murder was the catalyst to a lot of sadness, confusion, and of course, speculation. Because you have to admit that the timing of the senseless loss of life was very convenient timing for Dante. So, questions here. Did Roxanne's murder have anything to do with this trial? Like we said, Denver PD says no. They call it a domestic violence incident, but there's very few details available since this just happened. But Roxanne's murder in conjunction with COVID concerns actually threatened to derail this trial altogether. But in Kelsey's friends and family who were following the trial were blown away by this development. You'd have to be. It's just a very strange plot twist to happen in the middle of this trial.
I really started freaking out when one of the biggest witnesses for the prosecution was murdered. Like heart dropping to your stomach, you know, like racing back and forth, sitting back in like disbelief. Like, is this going to blow the entire case? Her testimony was going to be that Dante admitted to her that he killed Kelsey. Roxanne Martinez's cousin said, I don't have a single doubt in my mind that her murder was connected to this trial. And then I'd also heard that Dante had joined a gang in prison. So then, you know, my mind goes to, well, if he joined a gang, who's to say that they couldn't have somebody killed? You know, someone could order hit and then boom, you know, it's too coincidental. And it's not just like she was any witness who was going to say, oh, I knew Dante. You know, this was a woman who was going to say, Dante admitted to me that he murdered Kelsey. They haven't been able to definitively connect it, though. But I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Luckily, the trial was able to continue despite the several obstacles that threatened to derail the proceedings. Testimony continued, and the next witness would provide another piece towards the answer of the ever-looming question of where is Kelsey?
Two employees from the Pueblo landfill were called to testify. And they said that between 5 p.m. February 5th and 5:30 a.m. February 6th, an unknown person had damaged a padlock that secured an entrance gate to the landfill off of Highway 78. And that damage to the lock occurred while the landfill was closed for the evening. It had been hit with a hammer or a metal pipe. After looking at this lock that was tampered with, landfill officials informed the police and showed them security footage. And the security footage actually shows the headlights of a vehicle idling nearby. So you may not be able to glean a lot from this alone, especially since the surveillance video was pretty poor quality. And they couldn't really get to the make and model of this car. But earlier in the trial, cell phone experts had testified that Dante's phone had pinged off of a tower in the same area as the landfill, which is also where the landfill is actually really close to where Dante lived in Pueblo.
So after the prosecution rested, the expectation was that the defense would call several witnesses, but that's not what happened at all. They didn't call a single witness. And this made it clear that they were relying on an acquittal due to the fact that this was a homicide case without a body. And onlookers had no idea what to make of this.
One of the biggest things that stood out to me was the fact that the defense rested immediately. We were all kind of like, what the f***? Like, we didn't expect that. I'm like freaking out, like thinking like they're just going to try to drag her name through the mud even more. But then when I found out that they rested, I was terrified because I thought that means that they're pretty confident that the prosecution didn't do enough to get a conviction.
The prosecution's closing argument reminded the jury that, quote, all evidence presented at the multi-week trial showed that Dante Lucas killed Kelsey Schelling despite her body never being found. And the defense's closing argument referred to the case against Dante as, quote, the biggest stretch in Colorado history. The jury then went out for deliberation, and Kelsey's friends and family were on pins and needles.
There was so much circumstantial evidence that you would also, any normal person would be like, this guy did it. Like, I don't need a body to tell me that she's dead. I don't need, you know, a murder weapon. I don't need those things to tell me that this man is responsible for it. But at the same time, there are people who can't get past the fact that there was no physical evidence, technically. So honestly, I was worried. I barely slept, you know, all of those nights. And I was so terrified that the jury would come back and not find him guilty. I was freaking out.
In only a few hours, the jury shuffled back into court and had reached a verdict.
My heart was racing. I remember I was sitting on the couch with my dog. I didn't think that the jury would be back that fast. And it's scary because when they come back in 3 hours, the majority of the time, it's not guilty.
Due to COVID-19 restrictions, Taylor was not able to attend the trial, and neither was the media. So Taylor got her updates from a reporter on Twitter who was covering the trial day to day.
And I just remember seeing Dante Lucas found guilty for the murder of Kelsey Shelley. And I was crying. I was crying a lot. And I remember the first person I called was my mom. You know, and I just said, Mom, they finally got him. I don't know what would have happened if he was found not guilty. I don't know what would have happened. I know what I felt as like a friend of Kelsey's, and like I keep in contact with her mom, and I just, you know, tell her, I'm like, I'm thinking about you and Kels, like, you know, like I don't know how she's gotten through every day. I don't know what I would have done, like, as a mother, and like the way that she handled it so graciously, because I would be losing my mind, destroying, you know, the person's house. Like, I would be losing it. And I'm just so grateful to that jury, because all it took them was 3 hours to talk and say, he did this. He killed Kelsey Shelley.
The now 28-year-old Dante Lucas was sentenced shortly after the verdict came down. He was given life without the possibility of parole for the first-degree murder of Kelsey Schelling, who was pregnant with his child. He is serving a sentence at the Centennial Correctional Facility, a maximum security facility in Cannon City, Colorado. He was transferred to this facility from the Pueblo County Jail, where he had been incarcerated for the last 4 years.
On the heels of Dante's sentencing, Taylor recalls calling Dante with Kelsey first disappeared, when they all knew he was responsible but remained free.
I just think about the fact that, like, here I am, like, calling this person, like, just saying, like, just tell us where she is. Like, I know you killed her. And just, like, evil laughter. Evil laughter. And he has no remorse or regard for any of it, because when he was sentenced, his breathing didn't even change.
But Taylor was relieved at the verdict and about Dante being locked up for the rest of his life.
I was just like overjoyed, but I was also really sad too, because, you know, I knew 8 years ago when this happened that Kelsey was dead. You know, I didn't have any realistic hope. Like, of course there's always that hope, but I didn't have that hope. Like, no, she's going to be found one day. But even like knowing in my heart that she was gone, like when you finally hear those words, when it's declared in the court, when it's, you know, when it's officially stated, you know, that he did this, he killed her. It made it even more real than it felt for the past, you know, 8 years.
Dante's now exactly where he belongs, but this story and the calls to action in Kelsey's case are still not over. And that's because Kelsey's family is desperate to give Kelsey the proper burial and resting place that she deserves. Throughout the last 8 years, despite being found guilty, Dante has refused to speak on the subject.
Dude, like, you've been doing this for 8 years. You finally got convicted. Her family and friends are torn up, distraught, defeated, like, and you still can't even, like, give them the courtesy of saying where she's at. I don't know how, like, it works if after you're found guilty, like, even though he was already sentenced, I don't know if the judge could have been like, well, if you tell us where she is, you know, then we can give you a chance at parole or whatever the case may be. But I just believe that it's out of pure narcissism and, like, just no guilt and no shame.
We told you about the testimony at trial related to that landfill. The belief is that Kelsey was likely placed there by Dante, but we don't have 100% confirmation on that. If her body is at the landfill, there would be several challenges in finding her at this point.
One thing that her mom said was, what do we do now? And I don't have kids. I can't fathom the pain of literally screaming for help and nobody's listening. Nobody who has any power is listening to you. And your daughter and your grandchild are gone. And for 8 years, you're stuck trying to do this on your own and trying to hire, you know, private investigators and, you know, putting your own money into finding your daughter. And it's such a big relief. But at the same time, I'm like, well, you know, I've known this from the beginning and, you know, she's still not back. And, you know, she deserves to be laid to rest and not be wherever she is, like not have that be her final resting place. But it is bittersweet. And it's also disheartening to know that we still don't know where she's at, I guess. And that, you know, none of us will ever know what really happened to her.
And we end today's episode with some parting words from Taylor, Kelsey's friend.
I don't want people to forget her, and I don't want people to forget what happened to her. And I hope that, like, if someone who is in an abusive relationship, like toxic like this, like hears this, like I hope that all those women can get out of it before what happened to Kelsey happens to anybody else. I just get like so angry because, you know, like if we knew something was going to happen, we would have done something to stop it. I've had friends get out of relationships and tell me, like, I used to always think about, like, what if what happened to Kelsey could happen to me?
All right, well, a huge thank you to Taylor for being with us for the past 2 episodes. If you are listening out there and you have a story to tell, please email us hello@thefirstdegreepodcast.com. You can follow us on Instagram @thefirstdegree, @BillyJensen, @AlexisLinkletter, @JackVanek. Join our Facebook group. We are talking true crime all the time, and stick around because we are gonna kill some time and answer some of your questions from Facebook.
And remember, only you can prevent serial killers and keep your friends close.
But not
that close.
Happy Manatee Day.
Happy Crayon Day.
Oh, manatees.
So cute. Bye. Shout out to Jared Monaco for sound design and creating our original music for The First Degree. Thank you to our producing team, Caitlin Cleveland, Taylor Rogers, and Alan Santiago for Podcast One. Sources for today's episode include The Pueblo Chieftain, News AU, ABC News, KOAA News, the Denver Channel, KDVR, and as always, our First Degree guest is always our largest source in court documents.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and I bet it can be hard work, but do you know it's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
100,000 downloads in a day. Be among the first to hear season 2 of the American Nightmare podcast series, an incredible true crime case.
Sherry Crandall actually almost predicted her demise.
A nurse murdered inside her hospital. DNA, fingerprints, even an eyewitness haven't helped solve this case in 23 years. But now, 2 decades later, police say they may finally have their big break.
I'm DC crime reporter Paul Wagner. Join me for season 2 of an American Nightmare series, Murder in a Safe Place, a WTO production. Subscribe today on Apple Podcasts.
All right. Well, welcome to yet another episode of Killing Time. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Billy?
I'm doing, you know, fair. I would say fair.
You do look like you're doing fair. You're slouched over.
I am slouched over.
You have a little look in your eye.
I'm behind two. Yeah, well, I've got two pillows. I'm leaning on two pillows.
No hat, need a little which is pep a plus. In your step.
No hat. Little pep
it's
in
good,
my step.
It's a good day no hat, no
which
hat.
Which means I'm not hungover.
Oh, excellent. Wait.
And not depressed.
Is that now, have we come to the conclusion that, number one, this whole hat thing has become now, I don't know if the hat should be the mascot of the first degree or what, mm-hmm. but it's become a whole thing. Have we decided that now it is just, you're hungover, you're wearing the hat, you're hiding.
Sad hat.
No, it's, no, it's the sad hat. It's either I'm sad or I'm hungover. It's one of those two.
Yeah. Or okay. both.
Or both.
Usually both.
Which does coincide. Usually both. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Usually it's like the anxiety hat.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. right. The too lazy to shower hat.
Or the too lazy to shower hat too.
Okay. So for this episode of Killing Time, I thought I would go back to our roots where we asked some questions in our Facebook group. Because we haven't done that in a very long time.
Right. But real quick, can I say one thing that deeply upset me? It's a controversy that's been brewing for a while. So I was thrilled that when you Google me, Alexis Linkletter Jarrett is like the second thing that comes up. And I was like, people see this cosmic connection that me and Jarrett have for some unbeknownst reason, right?
Right.
But then someone connected these dots for me in our Facebook group and said, no, it's because people can't tell you and Jack apart. So when Jack is talking about Jared, they think it's you. And that's, they think Jared's your boyfriend because it's Jack saying it and they think it's you. And I was like, oh, that's terrible. That is not at all what I wanted or thought. I was like, I thought people knew how much I loved Jared separate from you and your relationship with Jared. And now it's just, it's all tarnished.
This is tarnished. It's funny because I don't think we sound alike at all.
But
I guess we both sort of, I was going to say, have a Californian accent, but you're not from California, so that wouldn't be it. Maybe we just spent so much.
Right.
We spent so much time around each other that now we sort of have the same little nuance in the way that we.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we both don't have high pitched voices. We both have pretty low voices for ladies. So that could be it too. But anyways, as me and Jared have a relationship outside Jacqueline, I just want to make that clear. So
my God,
I had to defend my relationship with Jared.
But you know what's weird about Google is different for everybody, because some people's Google results were coming up differently. So it must be they're using an algorithm from all of the things that it's collecting from your consciousness and then plopping out what serves you in the Google machine.
Absolutely. I mean, if you go to Google incognito, it should wipe away a lot of that stuff and it should give you the baseline of what they would give everybody.
Oh, that's
because if you just did a bunch of searches for comic books and then did Alexis Linkletter, you might get an Alexis Linkletter comic book type of thing there. I don't even know what happens if that happens, God forbid. But yeah,
that was a weird,
it does. It links. But... I put comic books. I'm looking at a comic book right now. That's why. I could have said cactus. So,
okay.
Anyways, just wanted to clear that up for everyone.
Yeah, Alexis and I are separate people. What if somebody had listened to the podcast and thought that it's been just two people the whole time?
That would be hysterical.
And it's Billy and just one gal.
And one gal.
Billy and a gal.
That would make sense. Yeah.
It would make sense. Before I jump into our questions, we had just been talking before we started recording Killing Time. We've talked about how we want to take Killing Time and make it its own episode in the week. So we'd have two first degree episodes per week. We'd have your case that's all tied up in a nice little bow. And then we'd have Killing Time where we'd get wasted and just f*** around for a while. But we want to know, we're trying to flesh out what our ideas would be, right? So we have a few ideas, but I think this would be a great time to get some firsty generated input about what those ideas could be.
Absolutely. I'd love that.
We would love
what do you guys want to hear on Killing Time each week?
Yeah. Do you want us to talk about weird crime cases? Do you want us to not talk about crime at all? Do you want us to answer questions from the first season? Like, there's so many different ways that we could go about it that I think it'd be great to get some input from all of our lovely listeners.
I'm here for it.
You know?
Give us the feedback.
All right. Okay, so I'm going to jump into some questions that we have gotten over the months. These are older, but they're still great questions. So are you ready?
Ready.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you could live in any fictional world, what would you like to live in?
Candyland.
That's an interesting one.
But you
Candyland,
hate sweets.
The mud, the like chocolate mud swamp. I mean, isn't there like a peppermint forest?
Yeah,
yes. It's, come I on, think guys. You just, try to do better than just, that.
If you just took some acid, I think that you could transport yourself into a Candyland,
dude,
or okay. Hell.
Hell, sure, but no, Candyland, Monopoly sounds fun, but Candyland's better.
I love that you're going for a board game.
Monopoly actually is a real place, so.
It is.
Oh, is it?
That. Yeah.
Where's Atlantic that?
City. It's Atlantic City.
That's not a real place.
Yes, it is. All those streets are Atlantic City.
It is? I want
the, like, Pasco, get $200. I want a Scotty. I want to be a little Scotty dog or a little thimble. Mm. Like, that is not a real place, Billy.
Well, he's saying that the squares are real places. I never knew that, which is probably really embarrassing. I did not put that together at all. Where would you live, Billy? Doesn't have to be a board game. I don't know why
doesn't
Alexis
have to, yeah, Alexis went
games.
Straight to the board games. Yeah. I'd be like, I think Scrabble. I think Scrabble would be great. Yeah.
Scrabble isn't a place. Scrabble's not a place. You're not, doing it right.
I'm not doing it right. I don't even go here. I don't know, man. I mean, maybe, you know, not Star Wars.
Narnia?
It seems like a real pain in the ass. Narnia seems like a pain in the ass, too. I mean, Harry Potter, but we all know Harry Potter's real. We just haven't, you know, that was sort of underneath the surface, but
that was mine.
Harry Potter just for the food.
But butterbeer is not good. You know, I had really high hopes for a butterbeer and it let me down. Because one, it's not alcoholic and I was expecting more.
You can ask for a spiked one though.
What do they spike it with? Rum?
I think it's rum, yeah. Ugh. And you could ask for Fireball whiskey. They've got a whole secret menu in the Harry Potter bar. And you can ask for all the secret drinks.
I think we were going to go on a first degree field trip to Potter World right before our COVID.
We were, and then a Star Wars trip or Star Wars land before Disneyland turned into a mass vaccination site.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe next year.
I think they are going to be opening up in a couple months. I heard that.
Well, yeah, we'll make our field trips.
So Harry Potter would be, that'd be pretty cool. Yeah.
What about you, Jack?
Mine would be Harry Potter Land, or I would like to live on the Lost Island, but then
too
be able
scary.
To.
Scary. Everyone dies.
I know, but it just is so good.
You know and what else looks fun? The Jetsons. Like modern.
Ah, yes.
Jetsons would be tight.
I'm there for that.
Mid-century modern kind of.
Mm-hmm. Googie architecture. I love it.
Yeah.
Jack, I can see you like that. Like that picture I sent you this morning with you dressed as Lilu. That's like a Jetsons vibe.
Yeah. I would thrive in a Jetsons themed architectural house. I like that.
Yes.
Okay. Second question. What is your biggest pet peeve?
Alexis knows mine.
Well, you know mine.
I wonder why you know each other's biggest pet peeves. Could it be because you're forced to live with each other?
My biggest pet peeve is when people don't give context to what they're saying, where someone just goes, he did blah, blah, blah. I'm like, who are you talking about? And Billy will do that.
Though.
Like Billy will do that out of like nowhere. Like I'm like, he's like, you know what? He's really this. I'm just like, who? What do you
we
mean?
Literally were talking about that person 5 minutes,
no,
5 seconds
weren't.
Ago.
No, we weren't. And then he bounces around people without saying who it is or what he's talking about. And I'm always like, people say he or she randomly. And I'm just like, explain what you're talking about. That's probably one of mine, other than people just being mean.
And on top of that, when you're in a conversation about something and then the conversation has changed and then somebody circles back to the conversation that has been long since squashed and then talks about it in a key, no context.
That's exactly what
it is. Circling back when nobody has agreed to circle back.
That's right. I hate that.
Because
you know what I love?
Closed yet.
Jack, you know this about me. I need to close a conversation with a summary. Like, okay, cool. So we're saying this and going forward, we're going to do this. And if you didn't have that closing argument, then the conversation's not over. And once we have it, we're not talking about that anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that I think I'm keeping up the conversations. They haven't been closed yet. And I'm just trying to make sure that we get to that summary point because we hadn't.
What's your biggest pet peeve, Billy? Oh, he doesn't like to do anything twice.
Yes.
Is that what it is? Okay. Give context for things that you've done twice that you weren't happy about.
Let's say like
hypothetically.
Honestly, you write an entire essay and then it gets deleted and then you have to do it again.
I think that's everyone's pet peeve though.
Yeah. Who enjoys doing that?
No, that's the extreme example, but then it goes to, it happens a lot where it's, oh, we have to do that again because the lighting wasn't right or this or that.
Well, Billy, that is called filming a television show.
But there are certain things that are, you can tell that are potentially human error that did not have to be done twice that will add another day to your life that you won't get back. That's my pet peeve.
Name an example in an everyman's situation, not I'm filming a TV show and the lighting wasn't right situation.
Okay. Example in a, what do you consider an everyman?
Somebody that's not on a TV show is a job.
Well, give me a job though.
Your job is you are, I was going to say like a data inputter, but then I would know what that doing something twice would be. A mailman.
A mailman. Okay. You deliver all the mail packages and then all the mail packages are eaten by wild wolves and then you have to deliver those same mail packages again.
Mm, that doesn't seem like it would happen.
Yeah.
But okay.
Well, you don't know about that.
My biggest pet peeve, and I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast, but it's when people tell me about their dreams. I hate it more than anything because a dream is always so good in your own head. But then when you try to describe it to somebody and it's all disjointed and f***ed up and makes no sense and you're trying to like explain it with this excitement and this fervor and nobody understands it because it's in your own little world. Hate it.
Yeah. Don't tell us your dreams. We don't want to know. We have our own to decipher.
You're like, I was swimming through the ocean, and then I ended up on Mars but you were there, but then you were like half of a snake. Like that's how dreams end up sounding to me. And I'm like, I don't understand the point of this dream.
I'll tell a dream if it's super easy. Like I had one the other day where I was like, yeah, me and Caitlin Cleveland were in a plane crash together. Sorry, Caitlin. Caitlin does producing on our podcast. Sorry, Caitlin. I didn't want to tell you this, but like that kind of dream I'll share because it's like, it's easy concise. To explain.
it's one phrase. You don't go into the details and you don't go into the storyline of the dream. Just if you can explain the dream in one sentence, then that's great.
Then that's okay. All right.
Right. I have a question about your dream. Did you die in the dream? Because I'm always interested when people get hurt or die, if they actually die in the dream or they wake up from the death.
No, I didn't ever wake up from it. I don't remember the impact. I just remember the descent.
Jesus.
Scary descent, but I didn't remember the impact. And those just mean, I looked it up. It just means you feel like you're losing control over something. And I think at that particular point, I think the association with Caitlin is like she edits this podcast along with Jared. You know what I mean? And I was like, I have too much on my plate is how I think I interpreted it. Like where I was freaking out about my responsibilities. But sorry, Caitlin, you're fine. We're fine. We're all fine. It's going to be okay.
I mean, a death dream is terrifying. It's totally plane crash. That's my biggest. That is my biggest fear in general. And to dream that,
awful.
Well, do you have a recurring nightmare, Jack?
Jared does. Jared, come tell your recurring nightmare. It's terrifying.
So, my recurring dream is I'm in the forest and it's really kind of like foggy, and it's really quiet. It's dark, and there's really thick trees. And then there's headlights in the distance and a school bus kind of slowly rolls up to me. And every single person that I know, like all my friends are on the bus and they're all dead. And then they start to wake up like zombie style and like walk off the bus towards me. And then I reach on my back and I have a shotgun and then I pull it out and then I wake up every time.
Okay. Let me ask you a question on this. When did you start having this dream?
I was probably in my early 20s.
Early 20s.
Okay. And it's all of his childhood best friends.
Okay, all your childhood best friends. So you started watching Walking Dead. You started playing video games.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, that all makes sense. It's just I've had it like probably five times.
Wow.
But it's this like spooky school bus creeps through the
Are you going to put this into any type of art?
Ooh, maybe I already have, like subconsciously.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. But I mean, I always wake up in a cold sweat every single time. It's like so terrifying. It feels so real.
It's the worst recurring dream that you could ever have, I think, in my opinion. Everybody that
pretty
you
awful.
Dead. Awful.
It's pretty awful.
All right. Well,
mad that I just told you my dream?
I said that my biggest pet peeve is telling dreams. And then here we are. We ended the episode with a dream telling. So,
all right.
Our irony has no bounds.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Well, we're running a little long. 17 minutes, time of death. Beep, beep.